Welcome to the Other Discovery Show. It's the bonus show from the Podcast Discovery Show, where every single week we talk about all of the other things we've discovered that have nothing to do with podcasts, most of the time. I'm Kirk.
And I am Zach. And this week I discovered an extremely venomous snail. It is called a cone snail.
Snails could be venomous.
Yeah, apparently not just venomous, literally can very easily kill a human.
So venomous means if it's eaten, it kills you, right?
That's poisonous.
Dang it.
Venomous is they inject you with poison.
Yeah, like a snake.
Yeah. And then poisonous is if you eat it, you get sick.
I always get it.
Because it's like you drink poison, you know? But basically, this is called the cone snail. And in a hilarious twist, and hilarious in a dark way, they have always been revered for their beautiful shells. People have traded them for centuries. They've traded them for jewelry and they've traded them for money. And they've been featured in sketches and paintings by people like Rembrandt. And we have just figured out that there is a really cool potential for using some of the venom for helping humans. Because, these cone snails, they not only are venomous, they have different types of venom that they can put out based on what they want to do.
So one of aquatic?
They're ocean snails. And they look just like a really... Here, I'll put this link in chat so everybody can take a look at it.
The reason I'm asking is I've found shells that look just like this. I mean, a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Like at our beaches.
Yeah, no, definitely.
With nothing in them, but like these exact shells. I literally have them in a jar in my bathroom.
Yeah, no, and it's... I feel like I've seen them as well, but luckily I didn't see one with a snail in it.
Because now I'm going to be more worried before I pick it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's wild. So, one of the things they can do with their poison is they can release a cloud into like the surrounding area that literally is a cloud of insulin.
What?
And it will put fish into like what they call it, glycemic shock. The one where your blood sugar goes all out of balance and you like fall asleep. And so they'll like cloud dose fish and kill them. Well, at least put them into like they can't move. And then they have like a little thing that they'll reach out and grab them. Some of them literally hide in the sand and they'll shoot out like a harpoon with poison in it and just like stab and poison the fish. Because there's over 600 different kinds of cone snails. But like the small ones, it feels like you got stung by a bee. But if you get to a large species, they can kill you in hours.
What?
And there's one that essentially
you don't want to be at sea and then get stung or whatever by one of these things.
Yeah, and you could be in trouble. And there's one in the Indo-Pacific that's apparently about the size of somebody's thumb that can deliver a toxin so strong that you only have time to finish one cigarette before dying from it. And they literally it's
that's
nicknamed,
a weird metric.
Yeah, it's nicknamed the cigarette snail. Because literally you have 5 minutes. So enjoy your cigarette because that's the end. But they also have started looking into what this can do to like influence our understanding on science. Because one of the other things it does, one of the other poisons will paralyze. And so they've looked into it because if they can isolate this specific part of the venom, it is the most effective painkiller we've ever seen. So not only is it like 1,000 times stronger than morphine, it isn't an opioid. So it's not addictive. And then they also have looked at essentially how they're producing insulin. So they make insulin that literally a fish can breathe it in through its gills and it's almost immediately picked up and puts the fish out. So like essentially they think that this could be, how can we make drugs that are more efficiently reached because this snail is so efficient at poisoning everything.
No, that's fascinating. And they are pretty. Like they have some really pretty like shells. That's scary. And I'm telling you, if they're the ones that are like this big, I've picked shells up like that.
Oh
like,
yeah, me too.
I have them. And it's a little disconcerting that maybe snail in there before.
It's crazy because, you're like, okay, one, it's beautiful. Two, it's a poisonous snail. But three, all the stuff they can do with it. They already use the cone snail venom in anti-wrinkle creams. And essentially it's an anti-inflammatory or like an inflammatory that would essentially try and puff the creases out of like wrinkles or whatever. And they basically have just tried to see all these different ways it can work. So there's some of them that they think could be making it so that you can better deliver medicine to your system. And they're thinking like for cancer treatment. So you can very quickly get anti-cancer treatments into the bloodstream so it'll go faster. And then there's some that like, basically all of this is just, there's a million different ways they're trying to look at this one specific snail's type of venom to try to use that knowledge to make medicine better. So it's just crazy because it's just got so many parts to it that literally there's no end to what this could potentially work with. But I mean, there is the unfortunate person that has to go out there and try and catch cone snails, which I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess just a bucket, like a reacher grabber or whatever. Like, don't touch it.
Reacher grabber. Those things are fun. Yeah, the robot ones, the ones that you get at the toy store, those are the best. Or the dinosaur ones, the ones that's a dinosaur face. And that's how you do it. That's how you pick up those snails. I found it's such a heartwarming article about a Florida man. Florida man
sounds heartwarming already.
This Florida man, I'm searching to see if we should try to find the Florida man that did this. He went out of his way and gave his pants to this other Florida man that needed pants. And it's just such a heartwarming story. And unfortunately though, he had drugs in those pants when he gave them to that man. And so when that man got caught by the police, he got accused of having drugs when really they weren't his pants. But It's a beautiful story, and I want to read it to you guys right now. Florida man tells cops that he was gifted pants by passerby after drugs found in pockets. This is in Fort Pierce. The pants were given to him by a passerby is a defense the Florida man used for the drugs found in his pockets, police say. Fort Pierce police arrested 40-year-old Willie. I'm not going to say his last name, even though it's in the article, Florida. I think you should maybe not be as open with your... I do think it's a little disconcerting, you know, putting people's full names and stuff on all these articles.
Yeah, there's definitely a downside for sure.
I don't like it. Anyway, Willie, I'm just going to call him Willie. After they responded to reports of a fight in Edgewood Terrace, whatever. According to the arrest report, police arrived at the scene, found two men, one of which was identified as Willie and his brother fighting in the roadway.
Just Willie.
They were just fighting in the middle of the road. When detectives were questioning him, he kept fidgeting with his pockets and ignored commands from law enforcement to take his hands out of his pockets, which prompted a detective to pat him down. Four plastic bags were found in his pockets, two of which had marijuana and MDMA, and the other had residue of an unknown substance. Police then say that Willie waived his Miranda rights and told them that he and the other man were not fighting, but they were wrestling in the street.
Wait, didn't you say it was his brother?
Yeah. And that's also when he told the police that the pants that he was wearing had been given to him by a passerby, and he didn't know what could have been found in those pockets. He was then charged with domestic battery and drug charges and booked into jail. But I do want to find the Florida man that gifted his pants and help him get his drugs back.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, what a generous person.
Apparently there was another one. There was another story. I think we maybe talked about it. Maybe we didn't. Where the defense for drugs in a car was that the wind had blown him in the car. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I do remember that. I don't think it worked.
It was a strong wind blew those drugs in the car.
Yeah. I mean,
there are some windy days out here, guys. You never know.
You never know when drugs are just going to shoot into your window.
Hey, this is Florida. There's drugs flying everywhere all the time.
It's just how it goes.
It's just part of everyday life. I don't know how many times that's probably happened to me. It's just, I don't know. It's crazy.
No, I do love the visual of a guy without any pants on wrestling his brother. And some just generous soul walking by and be like, oh, you don't seem to have any pants. Please take mine. He gave them to him. And then he gets home. He's like, oh, darn it. I forgot all my drugs in my pants that I gave to that dude wrestling his brother in the street. It's the most typical story. You hear it all the time. Everybody's had that day.
I've been there. We've all been there, right? Where we forget our pants and we're wrestling our brothers in the street.
Yeah. But then there's always that good Samaritan that's going to give you their pants right off their body. Go home pantsless to help somebody out.
Such a great story.
Beautiful, really. So I discovered something that I felt like we need to talk about because we've all actually been here. It's called the Diderot effect, and it's why we want things that we don't need and what to do about it. So the famous French philosopher Denis Diderot lived his entire life in poverty until 1765. And he became essentially famous for writing one of the most comprehensive encyclopedias of the time. And people found out that he was not rich, even though he had gone through and done something great for society. And so someone offered to buy his library for essentially what would be now $50,000. And so he had money. And after he sold this, and this is all the story, there's some conflicting stories where it was a gift or whatever else, but the premise is still here. After this sale, he bought a brand new scarlet robe. So just a really nice red robe. And that's when everything went wrong. So the robe was so beautiful that he then noticed how ugly all his other clothes were. And he essentially said that everything seemed out of place, surrounded by the common possessions with this amazing robe. And so he went on to buy a bunch of new stuff. He's like, I got to get rid of this old rug. I got to redecorate with some sculptures. I got to get a better kitchen table.
Yeah, Scott, he was so poor that someone gave him pants.
Somebody gave him pants right off him, and there was drugs in the pocket as an extra bonus. But basically, the premise is just that, where he got something new, and then it made everything else he had seem like, I feel like I need to upgrade some things. And so I feel like, first of all, that is something that we can all relate to, because I feel like COVID has been rough on that too, where you're like, okay, I need to try and dig myself out of what's going on right now. And you try to do that, but then sometimes you get kind of taken in down the rabbit hole. And so it's cool to hear kind of the origins of this thing. But there's a couple kind of examples. Buy a new dress and now you have to get the new shoes and earrings to match. You get a new CrossFit membership and soon you're playing for foam rollers, knee sleeves, wrist wraps, and paleo meal plans. You buy your kid an American Girl doll and you find yourself purchasing more accessories than you ever knew existed for dolls. You buy a new couch and you're questioning the layout of your entire living room. So all of those things are interesting, and I don't know exactly what if this website is about, like trying to do like kind of self-help thing, but it eventually kind of turns to that. So essentially they tell you how to not give in to this effect. And so you reduce exposure. Nearly every habit is initiated by a trigger or a cue. And so this led me down to kind of a side thing, and I'll link this for everybody as well. But there's essentially, you can look at how habits are formed. And this helps because you can, one, create helpful habits, or you can avoid bad habits. And so kind of the cycle, as he has it on this website, is a cue, then a craving, then a response, then a reward. And so you can kind of look at it two different ways, where cue is like a trigger for a bad thing, like you have a bad day, and so what is that cue going to lead to? You know, because for a lot of us, it's like you'd want to eat more, comfort eating, or you'd want to do whatever else. And so you can kind of choose to do that in that way. Or also, like me and Kirk know that every Friday we have the podcast to record. So that's our cue there. You know, it's not always negative, but yeah. So there's some really cool stuff that you can read about with kind of how you can form habits and everything like that. But essentially you want to reduce your exposure to try and prevent going too crazy. You know, don't buy everything that you possibly can see. Buy items that fit in your current system, so you don't have to do everything all over the place. And then set limits on yourself. Another one they put on here is buy one, give one. So when you get something new, give something away, like your pants. When you get new pants, donate your pants to a needy man on the street. So I'll leave with this because I think it's a good final thing. But yeah, there's a lot of cool examples of habit making that we'll also have linked in the show notes. But how to overcome the consumption tendency? Our natural tendency is to consume more, not less. Given this tendency, I believe that taking active steps to reduce the flow of unquestioned consumption makes our lives better. Personally, my goal is not to reduce life to the fewest amount of things, but to fill it with the optimal amount of things. I hope this article will help you consider how to do the same. In Diderot's words, let my example teach you a lesson. Poverty has its freedoms, and opulence has its obstacles.
That is fascinating. I still think that there's a Pokemon that's named something similar to that.
There is, and he makes encyclopedias, right?
No, there's a Pokemon card of this guy that I found, but no, I'm telling you, there's a... I don't know. I'll find it later, and I'll put it somewhere. I'll tell you guys.
You're talking about Dugtrio?
Maybe. I don't think Diglett? So. No, I know Diglett. Anyway, discovered from Today I Learned about basically the planet's best refrigerator, and it's not what you would think. So basically, I learned about bog butter. First of all, I don't even know what a bog is. Zach, do you know what a bog is? Like, I know it's in Ireland.
It's like an Irish swamp.
I visualize it as like a swamp, you know, but I think there's like more to it. I don't really know. I don't know what a bog is per se. I just think of it as a swamp.
Well, I thought I did, but now I don't.
But bogs are Ireland's original refrigerators, and they're pretty good because even 3,000-year-old butter is edible if they find it in a bog today. And they continue to find it. And what's funny is we know that it's edible because the archaeologists tend to eat it.
Okay. Well, okay. I'll pepper this in here. A bog is a wetland that accumulates peat, a deposit of dead plant material, often mosses, and in a majority of cases, sphagnum moss. So it's a specific type of swamp, it seems like. Other names for bogs include mire, mosses, quagmire, and muskeg. I don't know.
But it's a really interesting article because they talk about, you know, the science behind why the bog has been used for literally millennia to keep things refrigerated, specifically butter. I don't know why it's specifically butter, but it's specifically butter. But there's something in the bog that has an anaerobic nature, adds an anaerobic nature to it. So they don't get any oxygen at all. So the butter and the wood that it's in don't decompose at all. And what's funny, because they talked about even some of the pots that these things, the butter is in, sometimes are even older by even up to 100 years than the butter itself. So like apparently these people, the ancient Irish, would like reuse their wooden things forever because they would just keep putting it in the bog. It wouldn't decompose. They'd take it out, eat all the butter, and then just fill it up again. And so they'd keep this same, you know, barrel of butter for ridiculous amounts of time. But they also talk a little bit about kind of like the Irish folklore and stuff like that in regards to like offering sacrifices like to pagan gods and stuff like that. And that's why some of this is there. Like, it's not even made to be found. It's not being used as refrigeration. It was like, this is an offering to, you know, who so-and-so to, for, you know, for the winter crop or something like that. I mean, probably not winter, but you know what I mean? Like an offering to the gods for some sort of blessing.
And so it wasn't meant to be found in Eden.
It wasn't meant to be found at all.
Sure.
So that's why they're still able to find it now. And I think they said the oldest that they found that was still edible was 3,500 years old.
What?
Yep. 3,500 years old. And so because of this, they've been able to like study like the way craftsmen would make barrels, the way that they would make containers. Also, they've been able to study a lot of the way that dairy was then as opposed to now, and the Irish diet and stuff like that. I don't know. It's a really fascinating. It seems so silly and like, I don't know. It's interesting. I thought it was a cool article.
And you said that they eat this butter when they find
it. Yeah. Bog butter. Yep.
I mean, I'd eat it. I'd eat 3,000-year-old butter just so I could say that I did.
I don't know.
I mean, they're still fine.
I'd taste it.
They're mostly fine. I'm not saying I'd eat the whole thing. I'm not a savage. Well, I discovered something interesting this week, and it basically was, it's kind of a weird website because it looks like it's like TripAdvisor or whatever, but they had a cool article about the history of the pretzel. There are apparently mixed stories about how this all started. So it's very disputed, but the first non-verified version of when this started is it was out there in 610 AD was the first pretzel, and a monk in Italy was baking them in strips of dough and folded into crisscrosses as a reward for students who earned their prayers. Then there was also essentially throughout this time, different people invented it. It was always tied to Christianity. It was all throughout Europe. And the one thing that they did figure out is that it was in the 12th century text that was essentially saying that this was one of the main features of any feast, because they thought that these brought prosperity and luck. And then also there was some people who thought that it was like a good thing for wedding. The couple would essentially break the pretzel because then you would have good luck as your wedding was going on. But the historic tale of the pretzel gets really heroic in the 16th century. The Ottomans attempted an invasion of Vienna, burrowing a tunnel under the city wall at night. Little did they know that a few of the city's residents would still be awake. Monks baking pretzels in the monastery were working through the night and were said to have heard the digging. They rapidly alerted the city to this, whose defenses responded, and they thwarted the Ottoman attempts at invasion. The bakers were later rewarded with their own coat of arms, made up of a number of angry-looking lions holding a pretzel that can still be seen hanging above the doorways of European bakeries today. And honestly, the coat of arms is pretty awesome.
The night that pretzels saved the town.
Yeah, 100%. And it's just funny because there is a couple things like that. There's also like a patron saint of baking who has his own like, this is a, I'm trying to remember, Saint Honoré, I think. Has like his own pastry, and I can't remember why exactly.
That is a pretty intense coat of arms. I like it.
Yeah, no, it's but it's a cool thing for just random monks making pretzels to get their own thing. So yeah, he has the patron saint of baking has his own pastry, and this is it. It's called Gâteau Saint Honoré. And it looks very delicious. But yeah, there's always been these kind of weird moments throughout history that have locked random bakers into the annals of history for doing heroic and sometimes
yummy.
Awesome things. But yeah, that's named after the patron saint. So I definitely want to try one for sure.
Yep. No, that looks yummy. That does not look like a pretzel to me, but it looks yummy.
That's not. No, it's a different guy. Oh. That's not a pretzel.
Oh, what? I did not. I guess I got lost at some point.
Yeah, no, I was talking about there's also a patron saint of baking, and he has his own pastry named after him.
Oh, but it's not a pretzel.
It's not a pretzel.
All right. Now I want a pretzel. Zach, can you make some pretzels tonight and bring something to work?
I am not making pretzels tonight, no. Well, thanks so much for listening to the Other Discovery Show, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Podcast Discovery Show. We would love for you to get in touch. We have a Facebook group called the Podcast Discovery Club, and our Twitter is at the PDS Official. We also record the show live every Friday night at 8 o'clock on Twitch. We would love for you to be part of the show while we're recording it.
If you want to support the show, we have a number of ways you can do that. From our Patreon to our affiliate links, they're always linked in the show notes. In the end, you support the show just by listening, and it means the world to us. So thank you so much for being a part of our journey.